Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. Malware has been found hiding inside software in the Ubuntu Snap Store. After 33 years, Notepad finally displays text files properly. Facebook is launching its own blockchain division as part of a broader recognition, reorganization of its executive lineup. And Nintendo is bringing back its outrageously popular $60 NES Classic Edition console next month. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? Just because Jeff is confused doesn't mean you have to be. Visit cat5.tv/dreamhost to sign up for unlimited web hosting for your website with unlimited email accounts, MySQL databases, the latest version of PHP, WordPress, and more, and even a free domain name registration. It's less than $6 per month, so sign up today. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week.
Oh, but wait. You don't have your glasses on this week.
No, I switched to contacts.
Switched to contacts?
Yes.
And how's that going for you?
Well, it's going to be a bit of a tricky little learning curve, I think.
Should we bring the teleprompter in?
Maybe.
Bring it in.
It's not bad. I just... Some of the words I cannot read.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Yep, she's going to make it
up. The optometrist actually asked me, like, can you see this line? Can you see that line?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah, it's good. Turns out I should have had the teleprompter with me so I could...
There you go.
Oh, wait, that's not going to work. All right. Malware has been found hiding inside software in the Ubuntu Snap Store. A pair of seemingly normal apps hosted by the Canonical-backed App Hub were discovered to contain a cryptocurrency miner disguised as the systemd daemon. The affected apps also shipped an init script to auto-load the malicious code on boot and allow it to run in the background on affected systems. Canonical says it has removed all applications from the author pending further investigation since learning of the flaw via a GitHub issue on the weekend. Because the Snap Store doesn't provide public-facing install numbers for apps it holds, it's unclear how many Linux users have been affected by this minor issue, although it's worth noting that both apps were only uploaded in late April. Regardless of the exact figure, it's a given that many users will now be asking how this was allowed to happen in the first place. Pardon me. How was it possible for malware to find its way into the Snap Store and onto users' systems? The code in question was first found by GitHub user Towerder in an app purporting to be a version of the popular 2048 game. Curious as to why the app added a system startup script, they checked it out and saw that it was for a cryptocurrency miner tool. The user then checked another app uploaded to the Snap Store by the same developer, and guess what? They also found it contained the same Bitcoin miner script, linked to the same email address. This situation marks the first major security issue in the Snappy packaging system, but although unwelcome, this particular fail is not necessarily as frightening as it sounds at first, nor is it necessarily a fault with the Snappy format. All apps uploaded in the Snap Store undergo automatic testing to ensure that they work and install correctly for users on multiple Linux distros. Snap apps are not checked line by line for anything suspicious or out of the ordinary. Under the current framework, there was simply no way to detect or prevent this malware from being bundled up with an app and made available on the Snap Store. Any theoretical pre-detection would have been hard to do given that both of the affected apps were uploaded as proprietary software. Their code was not available to check. The cryptocurrency miners in this instance can be considered malware because they weren't mentioned in the store description and they used system resources without permission or user knowledge for a task that wasn't authorized. That said, the mining scripts themselves don't seem to do anything malicious to the system itself, for example. They don't harvest data, inject code, or hijack browsers. It is possible that the app author in question wasn't being intentionally malicious, given the lack of effort to disguise the malware and the inclusion of a hardcore email address mentioning a Ferrari. They may have been attempting to draw attention to a hole in the Snapcraft vetting model. Pardon me. And if so, it worked.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
So to be fair,
you
try reading the news on national television with no eyes.
I am blind.
Well, you made it through.
Okay, but thinking of the story.
Yes.
If somebody is going to be downloading apps, what kind of things that should they be looking for to make sure that this kind of situation hasn't happened? Like, how would you know?
Yeah. I think what it boils down to is just recognizing that this is not an issue with the Ubuntu system or the ecosystem. It's not an issue with downloading from, you know, it's not them. It's not their problem. It's not anything to do with Ubuntu, only that it shows that we need to be more careful as users. So, for example, and I'll just kind of break this down for you. So GitHub is a very popular place to get software because coders can upload their open source software and distribute it there. And they can even distribute binary closed source stuff. And it's there on GitHub. Well, if I install it and it has malware in it, then I am kind of to blame because I've trusted the source. Mm-hmm. It's not that I've trusted GitHub, it's that I've trusted the coder who's distributing it.
Right.
So similarly, in an app store, I'm trusting the developer. So do I know this developer? Is it an official release? Is it a release from the people who are actually developing this software, or is it a third party? So we have to be careful. And we look at things like GIMP 2.9. Is it 2.9 that has come out? 2.9. And so when we go to GIMP.org, for example, this is GNU Image Manipulation Program, a Photoshop alternative. So when we go to their website, GIMP.org, we know that we are dealing with the developers, the folks who have built this software. So we can trust that. Mm-hmm. If we go to a third-party store, app store, not necessarily buying it, it's free, but if we go to a third-party website and download it from there, what's to say they haven't injected something into it? Because we, the user, are downloading it from an untrusted source.
Right.
In Linux, it's a bit difficult.
Yes.
So your question, you know, how do we know if we're... Mm-hmm. Well, we just have to be careful and be mindful that if we are downloading from third-party sources, we need to kind of vet them a little bit.
Right.
Are these trustworthy sources? Are they related to the official distribution? I do a lot of software development. I do NEMS Linux, for example. And I have, I am officially a part of the Nagios Exchange. I'm endorsed by Nagios Enterprises. And so there's a certain level of, I'm nothing to do with Nagios, but I am kind of, I'm official, if you will, as a third party.
Right.
So you just have to vet that and say, hey, okay, yeah, that I can trust, but maybe not the next one. It's really tough. And I guess with, it boils down to doing what this person has done and said, oh, I found out that the software had this malicious code, so I'm going to report it.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Do you think that perhaps that person who had released this maybe actually was illustrating the loophole? Like, could it
possibly
have been just a...
But they could have been also just tapping into a free resource that would have allowed them to mine some cryptocurrency.
Right.
I mean, there is nothing, and I think what the story points to is that there is nothing wrong with mining cryptocurrency. There's nothing wrong with cryptocurrency mining. What is a problem here and what classifies this as malware is the fact that it went into systems who entirely did not opt in for crypto mining. Mm-hmm. They opted in for a game.
Yes.
Right.
So that's where it's malicious. It's not the mining process and it's not Ubuntu. It's that there is this mining code in something that it's not supposed to be in.
Right. Thanks.
That's a big topic. Mm-hmm. That could be a show.
That's its own show.
Absolutely.
After 33 years, Notepad finally displays text files properly.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, Notepad has been around for as long as Windows, originally shipping with Windows 1.0 way back in 1985. However, it's taken Microsoft 33 years to fix one of Notepad's most annoying problems. It can't display all text files correctly. While that may sound ridiculous, it has been a frustration for anyone attempting to open a text file in Notepad that was created on a Unix, Linux, or Mac OS system. The text output is garbled, and it's all because of the line endings. As Microsoft explains on its developer blog, until now, notebooks supported text documents containing...
Notepad,
supported text documents containing three types of line-ending characters. They're all Windows end-of-line characters, carriage return, and line feed. If the text document uses those, the output in Notepad will be perfectly formatted. Text documents created in Unix, Linux, or Mac OS use different line-ending characters. When you try and open them in Notepad, you see a garbled mess of text since all of the line breaks are missing. The latest Windows 10 Insider build contains the updated version of Notepad, complete with additional line endings support. The status bar will even show you which endings the file uses.
Cool. It's about time. It is absolutely about time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 33 years about time.
I feel like Notepad, you had one job.
I have to install Atom on every Windows system just so I can open files.
It's very annoying that there's been this software that really is useless for so long.
Yeah. Right.
And yet we still open our files, manually re-add the carriage returns.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, it's such a simple fix, really, when you think... maybe there's a lot of back-end changes they've had to make because of the way the system works.
But no, this is just Microsoft being cocky and saying, oh, everyone will conform to us.
Right.
Yeah. You know how they were with Internet Explorer?
Yes, yeah,
and then finally realized, okay, well, this is not going our way, so we'll drop that. Now, Notepad is finally...
To say 33 years is like, wow, 33 years is a lot. Let's put a perspective on this. I'm 34. Pretty much my entire existence, they've been ignoring this problem.
Right.
How much has technology changed since I was a baby?
Yeah.
And they're just getting around to this now. It's like, come on, Microsoft.
Right. Oh, I know. So, okay, so does this mean that if I'm at a computer and I'm opening a Word document, but I'm using like LibreOffice, can I open it in... Oh, wait.
In Notepad, no.
No.
Notepad is for, like, are you familiar with .txt files? So they are strictly text.
Okay.
And not just .txt, like they can be .sh files, for example. It would be another one that I try to open every time.
You can open a JavaScript file.
Anything that is just plain text. There's no formatting. It's just, there's no bolds. There's no underlines. It's just plain text. Usually scripts or README files to explain how things work and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it's been useless up until now.
Completely, evidently.
Yeah. So it's about time. Yay!
Yeah.
Finally, Windows 10 is stepping into 1987.
Yippee! Facebook is launching its own blockchain division as part of a broader recognition of its executive lineup. Reorganization of its executive lineup.
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for the eyes to click in.
It's okay. It's going to be...
This is... How long have you been with Contacts?
This is day two. Okay,
folks.
So what's happening?
And she hasn't changed them.
Can I...
That's the problem.
Okay. No, I've changed them. Okay, here's the problem I'm having so I can describe it to you so that you understand what's happening. If I don't blink, which I can't be blinking constantly while reading the teleprompter, it's like they haze right over and that I can't see through them. I need to like blink them clear, but then it's the words are moving.
Do you want me to like stand here misting you?
I know.
Like a mister?
I'm having some problems just seeing just blurriness instead of words.
Okay, so where are we at here?
Okay, we're...
So,
let's just start.
We're talking about how Facebook is launching a blockchain division, and they're reorganizing their executive lineup.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
All right. So the move comes 4 months after CEO Mark Zuckerberg said in a Facebook post that he wanted the company to go deeper and study the positive and negative aspects of cryptocurrency. The company is saying little about its blockchain division for now, but we do know that David Marcus, who was serving as the vice president of messaging products and overseeing Facebook Messenger, will be running the blockchain group. Interestingly, he is also the former CEO of PayPal with a longtime interest in payment systems. He also currently serves on the board of Bitcoin exchange Coinbase. Mm. Instagram's current vice president of product, Kevin Wheel, will be leaving that role to join Facebook's blockchain team. The two positions are the only ones announced so far for the team and come amid a lot of other employee reshuffling.
Interesting.
Huge.
So, Facebook cryptocurrency.
Or a cryptocurrency payment platform.
Right.
That's what we need. We need to be able to buy Category 5 shirts by Turtlecoin and, you know, and so on and so forth. That's what's going to take cryptocurrency to the next level of being a viable currency, is being able to transact.
I agree. My hesitation, though, is Facebook, really? They control enough of the world, and they've just shown that they completely screwed up not releasing our data. If they have some sort of a back end to a blockchain technology that is tied into your entire profile and everything, like, the linkage and the marketing that could come out of this is now insurmountable. To say, oh, by the way, so we've determined that this age group who like to do these things that pretend to text to get out of awkward situations are most likely to be the ones to buy into this Bitcoin or this coin, and to do it at this rate, and they're more likely to be miners, and therefore we're going to target. Like, really? Really?
I don't even want to go there, though, Jeff. Like, we can get into conspiracy theories and...
But it's not even... It's just... I am a fan of spreading the wealth. And I think Facebook is getting to the point of having, dare I say it, too much social power.
So they need to pull a Google, and instead of having everything under this massive company...
Have side companies.
Have individual little companies that
they
can make mistakes with. And
go the way of like Coca-Cola, who's got a bazillion brands underneath it.
Yeah.
At least doing it that way, it doesn't seem as conglomerate, we're going to own you. This way, it's like, it's your Facebook coin with your Facebook account. And by the way, have you got your Facebook toilet paper? Like,
they have that? Nice.
I'm sure it's coming.
Oh, it's so social. I just don't want that posting on my wall.
I didn't see at first how the two would be connected, really, but not the toilet paper, Facebook and blockchain. But I guess it is
Oh, there could be but think about this. If you want to be concerned about your privacy, what if they're using the blockchain to encrypt and protect?
Right.
Just to for authentication and things like that. I like the idea of having someone other than PayPal. Right now, I'm quite fed up with PayPal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys know this, and if you're in America, you probably don't care. Maybe you do because you love us. But PayPal pulled out all of their debit cards from Canada. So
really?
Yeah. So
when did that happen?
About 2 months ago.
I did not know that.
So if you're in Canada and you carry a PayPal debit card to give you access to your funds that are in your PayPal account, you've just lost access to it if you live in Canada. So I'm not happy with them whatsoever at this point. So I'd love to see someone else rise up that can give me a way to transact, especially if they can provide me a way to transact without having to wait 3 days to withdraw money to my Canadian bank account.
Right.
And convert currencies. I have to convert from US dollars to Canadian dollars to put it in my account, and I lose a few points on the transaction. Like, it's stupid. So I'd like to see something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's just step one.
Yeah. Just step one.
Nintendo is bringing back its outrageously popular $60 NES Classic Edition console next month. The console was intended as a limited-time offering. It went on sale in late 2016 and was discontinued in April of 2017. Between the low price and the heavy draw of Nintendo nostalgia, the NES Classic Edition was a major hit. As a result, it was nearly impossible to find. And now Nintendo says it's bringing back the console. Nintendo tweeted on Sunday night, hashtag NES Classic Edition will return to stores on June 29th. They also said this system and the hashtag NES Classic Edition system are expected to be available through to the end of the year. It's great news for anyone who missed out on the chance to buy the NES Classic Edition during its brief window of availability. The only other way to buy one at this point is to go through third-party resellers like eBay, where prices are often triple or more of than the original $60 cost of the console. The same 30 classic NES games that shipped with the first run of the NES Classic Edition will ship on the new production run as well. So
we saw this coming.
This is smart for Nintendo. Supply and demand, complete control.
But they are the masters of this. I mean, every time Nintendo has come out with a new console, I mean, look at when the Wii came out. They're like, hey, we've got the Wii. And people were spending $3,000 to buy a stupid console on eBay because they had to get the Wii.
Yep.
Right.
Nintendo is amazing at this. They go, how many people need this? A billion? Let's make five.
and then
they put the other, you know, billion in a warehouse somewhere and then go, all right, they've waited long enough. Throw it out there, and people jump at it. I mean, it's a great marketing system.
Right.
But in the meantime, it's 30 games.
Yeah.
30 retro games.
Raspberry Pi can get you so much more.
Need I remind you, if I just reach down here.
Haha, how many games on that?
Does this look like an NES classic to you?
It does.
Does it? I mean, come on now. With HDMI output, because that's a Raspberry Pi 3B Plus. And that has like 3,000 games on it.
Right.
I'm not saying this is legal. I'm just saying it's awesome. So it's not officially endorsed by Nintendo.
But it works.
I'm just waiting for the lights to turn off.
But if you've got all the, like if you have the freeware ROMs, because some of them you can get freeware.
I refer to abandonware, and I realize the chat room will now erupt and say abandonware is not actually a thing. But it's like it's software that is so old that it's just not sellable anymore.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you can find some of them on like archive.org.
Sure, yeah.
True enough. If you find them there and you get them as a ROM, like, who cares?
Yeah. So that's my homebrew little NES classic. How do you like
that's
that? And we taught how to do that on Category 5 Technology TV, didn't we? So
we certainly did.
A while ago, RetroPie, there was a game. You couldn't figure out what it was.
Last week, we figured it out. Yeah.
Okay.
Sasha realized it's Snoky. Right.
Snoky.
All right.
Snoky.
Okay.
Make sure you tune into episode 555 of Category 5 Technology TV.
Actually, that episode was amazing.
And if you want to see how far games have come, Jeff, from that era to, like, because this also has an Atari 2600 on it.
Right.
From that era all the way up to the HTC Vive.
Yes.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Big thanks this week to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
Thank you, Sasha. I'm Robbie Ferguson.
I'm Jeff Weston.
It's been so great having you here this week. I hope that you've had a lot of fun. Please remember, we love and we thrive off of your communication. Mm-hmm. Get onto our website, category5.tv. Find all the different ways that you can communicate with us. There are links to our YouTube channel. Maybe you're already watching on YouTube, and you can give us that thumbs up, that subscribe, and even comment below. We'd greatly appreciate that. We may just quote you on the air. So say nice things.
Always say nice things.
Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Bye.